Greetings and welcome back, everyone, to Let's Talk About Star Wars with me, Garrett Weinzierl, him, Tom Merritt, and her, Jenny Josephson. I'm not sure I've ever said that in the same order once. I mean, I'm sure I have because the amount of episodes we've done, it had to have happened by now. But whatever the case, we are back to do exactly as the title of this year podcast advertises. Around the table, let's start with Jenny this time. Jenny, how you doing and how's Star Wars treating you?
Well, Star Wars is treating me great. Do you want to know how?
I would like to know how.
Oh, I'll tell you. Okay. So I do another podcast. I produce it. It's called Make Me Smart. And oftentimes we talk about economic things and technology things. It doesn't always veer into the Star Wars universe. Mm. However, next week on the 29th, we're going to be talking to a guy named Tim Leong, who just put out a book called The Star Wars. I think it's called The Star Wars Graphic. Now I have to look it up. It's basically that book you saw that has all of those amazing graphics, data visualizations of Star Wars.
Ah, I just recently got to crack the spine on that because I was over with my Star Wars friends, Ben and Abby, who I reference on the show. I feel like every time we do it, and they had just gotten it, and I was sitting there having a cocktail, and they just threw this thing at me like, look at this book!
It is the coolest. It's called the Star Wars Super Graphic. And the publisher pitched us, and I was like, I don't want to do this unless I could do it justice. Because, like, it's not like we're having them on our show where we would be able to do it justice. So what I realized was I'm going to create Star Wars audio graphics. And I'm not going to say any more than that, but you tune in on Tuesday to hear what we're going to do.
What the what? Okay. All right. You have very much piqued my interest. Have both of you seen the Star Wars Super Graphic book, by the way?
Oh yeah. I read it cover to cover because I'm building things based on it.
Gotcha. Well, I only kind of skimmed it, but it seemed to be the perfect mix of actually interesting information and graphs and graphics that make me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. It was
So I have melded the pod. I've merged the podcasts.
You've reached a singularity in your podcast there, Jenny. I'm anxious to hear this. I'm going to have to go and check that out. I have to admit I've never listened to your podcast that
it's
you just mentioned.
I'm not on it. Like, it's only some other people, but I produce it. So I finally have brought some Star Warsiness to this podcast, and I'm very happy.
That is fantastic. I can't wait to hear. Tom, how about you, sir? Are you still lost in the Star Wars universe?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything as cool as Jenny, but I am really enjoying reading Dr. Aphra.
Oh, nice. I've been meaning to take
my favorite Star Wars thing right now.
Okay, so, as a matter of fact, you have just reminded me that I am fairly certain my Marvel subscription is still running, and yet I haven't probably logged in a month since I finished binge reading Darth Vader. How are you reading it? Where should I go to read it?
I'm reading it in Comixology. I just subscribed to it, and it shows up on my Pixel C every week. And it's just, or not every week, but whenever it comes out, I guess it's monthly. It's great. It's just a really fun story. And she's so interesting because we don't often get good looks at the chaotic good person who's kind of on the wrong side of the fence. Han Solo is like that, but he's firmly on the good side these days. Dr. Aphra is firmly on the side of cooperating with Darth Vader and the Empire. And that's really fun. Plus, 000 and BT, her two droids, and Black Kersantan, her Wookiee friend, are all beautiful dark versions of C-3PO, R2-D2, and Chewbacca. It's just the best.
It is good. Although I would argue, Tom, that nowadays Han Solo is firmly on the dead side.
Well, that is, spoiler if you haven't seen Force Awakens, geez. But yeah. No, that's a good
say,
point. He's not on any side other than the bottom side of that fall.
Yep, which is a planet that has since exploded.
Yep.
He is Stardust. well, that is uh, That's awesome. I that was one of the breakouts from Darth Vader, I think, for anyone who read it. Obviously, Dr. Effer. That's why she got her own darn spinoff. But I definitely left and I went in with a lot of hype for Dr. Effer and kind of expected her to fall kind of flat because she had been so talked up for me. And instead was just like, oh, yes, no, everyone was right. This is a character I absolutely love.
Yeah. And I'm glad they kept going with her. At first, when they brought the spinoff, I thought, oh, she may have been a one-joke wonder. I wonder if this is going to be milking it too far. But they've done great stuff with their stories.
Oh, that's great. I'm looking forward then to getting back into that. I also want to get into the new Vader series as well. But I've hit a speed bump. Tom and Jenny, I've been I put out
a land speeder bump.
Oh, maybe I don't know how does that affect the repulsors.
Have you been thrown for a loop?
There you go. We'll use that. So I put out my first two solo episodes about the first half and second half of the first Thrawn trilogy book, and very quickly, like, immediately dove into the second book because I enjoyed the first one so much, and now I'm about halfway through it and I just can't bring myself to pick up the book anymore. I'm so bored by it, guys.
I have a really simple solution for you.
Just keep reading?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just read the Wikipedia and skip to the third book.
Oh, but I keep waiting for it to get good, but now I'm
It's like 25 years old.
Okay, I'm actually at the point where I can't bring myself to pick up the book, and Inferno Squadron is sitting right next to those three books on my nightstand, like, oh, I just want to read you. You're new and shiny and probably more interesting.
Just read that then, and then either go back to the second book. Like, always follow your book desires. Don't ever, I tell Matt this, my husband, all the time, which is, if you get stuck on a book, put it down, read something else, then maybe go back to it, or just read the summary. That's why the internet exists. The third book is really good, but I was trying to think of, like, how could I convince you to read the second book, and it occurred to me, I couldn't remember what happened in the second book.
Then I was like,
I'm just going to have him skip it.
that is not the reaction I expected from Jenny of all people.
That's Listen, okay. If the Thrawn Master gives you permission.
Yeah, I give you 100%. That book isn't even canon anymore. It's purely there so you can understand what was. And so if what was doesn't grab you for the long haul of the middle one, just skip it.
All right. Fair enough. That's a good, honest answer, Jenny, that I did not expect. That being said, I do feel like I just want to, I don't know, I want to move my cred needle to full on the Thrawn trilogy.
Yeah, exactly.
I
felt that way about Tarkin, probably not as intensely as you're feeling, but I enjoyed parts of the Tarkin novel, the new one, the canon one. But man, it was a slog. It's kind of all over the place. And then there were some great moments that were worth the slog, but I didn't feel like I had as coherent of a story as the new canon Thrawn book did, or Ahsoka, or any of those.
And Ahsoka was slow, like quite slow during the majority of the book. The majority of the book is about space farmers, but I still enjoyed everything that was happening, especially with the character, you know, just the way they wrote Ahsoka. It was so well done. But the second one, at least where I'm at in the middle of it, it kind of seems to be in my eyes, at least, failing where I feel the first book succeeded, and especially in the writing of the known characters of Luke, Han, and Leia. Han especially. There's just pages after pages of Han having discussions with this pseudo-hero of his about his political motivations. I'm like, this is not Han Solo. He doesn't have conversations like this. Move along. But it's strange, because I thought Zahn knocked it out of the park in the first book. So it's just weird. I don't know. I guess I was surprised how much I liked the first one, and now going to the second one, I'm just kind of falling asleep.
It moves at a 90s pace, Garrett.
A 90s pace.
But if it's a 90s pace, it should be.
That just
be,
made my hip hurt.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, are we talking grunge
90s?
When
there was no other Star Wars, I'll put it to you this way. This is a really interesting counterpoint. When there was no other Star Wars property in the dark time before or after the first three movies that blew all our minds, but before the prequels that blew some people's minds and devastated others for life, there was nothing. There was nothing, right? Except these Thrawn books were the kickoff of this bigger universe, whatever they called it when it really was the universe.
Yeah, the comics, which were not meant to be considered canon, even though they sort of were. Yeah. You had Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Like, you didn't really have it. This was the great hope of like, ah, the story continues now. Mm-hmm. When we didn't think Lucas was going to do prequels after all, this was all we had.
Yeah. And so you had more patience for it at the time because that was it. But now you're living in the golden age of Star Wars expanded media. So like, I can see why you wouldn't have the patience for like a 300-page diktat on Yal Samiri or whatever, however you pronounce those little fuzzy Ewok sloth things.
I call them force negating geckos is where I've relegated them to my brain, and they're hokey. But he did a cool thing with them at the end of the first book, so I'll let it slide. Whatever the case is, that's the hiccup I'm experiencing right now, at least in my Star Wars book reading. But that's neither here nor there, because the big topic we came here to talk about today is that, according to Hollywood Reporter, an Obi-Wan movie is in the works. And by in the works, we mean in early talks. And by early talks, we mean that maybe, sort of, possibly, Stephen Daldry is going to helm the film.
And, Roger Daltrey? Oh, wait, no, sorry.
And there is no script. So.
And Obi-Wan, I'm sorry, Ewan McGregor has not been confirmed to be in it.
There's been basically nothing confirmed other than this might happen.
This means Lucasfilm said, let's do an Obi-Wan movie and let's start the process. That's all this means, right? And it leaked out.
Right. That being said, it's enough to get me excited because
I'm not sure.
Oh,
there's so many things. It needs to be Ewan McGregor and it needs to be interesting. And those are things that I'm skeptical about because, okay.
Tom, I want to,
here's the thing. I loved a lot about Rogue One, and I gave it a pass because it was the first one. Han Solo looks like it's also going to be taking place in that same rough time period that's like Rogue One, Star Wars Rebels. The logical place to set an Obi-Wan movie is in his period on Tatooine, which is the same time period between, you know, episodes 3 and episodes 4. Kind of feel like you're restraining your storytelling when you're saying we know what happened before and we know what's going to happen next. I'd almost rather see an Obi-Wan movie before he met Qui-Gon, or something like that. Or if you're going to set it between 3 and 4, have him go off to an unexplored section of the universe and do something entirely new and cool and different.
I would go you one further, which is, you know how for a while now, music biographies of like Johnny Cash and Ray Charles, where they take it from like one major formative moment in the musician's life all the way to whatever the resolution of their arc is. That's the Obi-Wan movie I want to see. I want to know how that guy became a Jedi. I want to see the live action version of him falling in love with Satine. I want to see all of the interesting things that they always reference and talk. Does Obi-Wan have a family?
Like, how do an actual biopic.
It? Do a biopic of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, could you get away with showing his battle with Darth Vader, like from a different perspective?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Is like, remember that great thing that we talk about all the time, which is that someday we're going to find out that prequels were just a Lifetime made for TV movie.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Really happened. Do the Oscar nominated biopic of Obi-Wan Kenobi. I would love that. Is the movie I want to see.
I don't think that's what you get Stephen Daldry for, though.
No,
but
it ain't Billy Elliot either, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but Danny did just sell me on the most bonkers pitch for an Obi-Wan film. That's completely insane, but the way you say it, I want to see that movie.
Like Jedi comes around,
He is the crown guy, though, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Wouldn't that be great?
Show me all the stages of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the exception of Clone Wars.
150% sold.
Yeah, yeah. Is the one guy you don't know anything about his origin? Like you get little drips of it in Clone Wars. You get almost nothing of it in the first Star Wars movie because he's like, I'm mysterious, and then he dies. But like, that's what I want to know. What planet is Obi-Wan Kenobi from? Can you answer this?
Not without going to Wikipedia.
could, well, go to Wikipedia and see if it's even in there.
That's a very good question.
How did he get his rat tail?
How did he get his rat tail? How was he? How did he become a Jedi? Who found him?
I'm going to Wikipedia.
His homeworld is Stujon.
No.
Born on the planet Stujon, Kenobi was taken as the Padawan learner of Qui-Gon Jinn.
See, all right.
Stujon was also one of the bannermen of the Starks, I believe.
I know. I was like, isn't he Stujon Umber? I'm very confused.
Okay, so.
But that's what I want. I want the whole.
Obi-Wan Kenobi's homeworld was coined by George Lucas at Celebration 5 in Orlando.
All right.
I think he met a guy named Stujon at the Waffle House in Orlando and was like, okay, that's what it is.
So here's
comedian and talk show host Jon Stewart interviewed Lucas and asked him for the name of Obi-Wan Kenobi's home planet. So Lucas jokingly said it was Stujon.
Okay, so it was kind of a throwaway joke. Okay, so I think we can chalk that up to that not being canon. However,
I think they could probably change that. Yeah.
Yeah. However, what we do know is canon is the fact that at least in Obi-Wan's era, Padawans were only taken on when they were children. So do we want to see Obi-Wan's origin? Because it sounds like we're retreading prequel territory immediately with baby Anakin, and no. I'm not sure I want to watch that.
Not in any great depth. No, it would not be like a whole movie about it. I'm thinking of the Ray Charles movie.
Yeah.
You just get one iconic moment from and Johnny Cash too. One iconic moment from the musicians, like the thing that's going to carry the theme of the movie all the way through.
You do it in The Crown too, where you have flashbacks of a young Elizabeth that inform the action of the current Elizabeth that you're watching.
Right. But you don't make a whole movie about how they do a pod race.
No, you don't have him say wizard.
No.
Ever.
No. Or Whoopi.
Or now this is pod racing. Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm very sold. Now, that being said, that seems like a far-fetched pitch. It would seem safer to me that we're getting a more straightforward kind of...
I'll be so disappointed if it's like, Obi-Wan helping the rebellion get started. Here's another piece of how the... I'm like, I get it. I got the rebellion. Star Wars Rebels is doing a great job covering that.
Yeah,
we're done.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that specifically. I don't think it's going to be because Rebels kind of already killed that.
What else are you going to do then?
I don't know. And that's part of my question is like how if you don't do first of all, if you do Tatooine, is that interesting enough? Can you have an entire movie take place on Tatooine? Just
show him collecting garbage, bringing it back to his hovel.
Right. Like as much as
talking to Jawas.
I want to see that scrapper version of Obi-Wan. I'm not sure. I don't know if
Star Wars. And we kind of got that in Rebels too, in the Darth Maul episode.
Mm-hmm. We barely though really got to see.
But as much as I need, honestly.
Yeah. Well, we know what he did on that planet. He just kind of lurked.
And we're getting it in the Star Wars comic also through the Obi-Wan journal.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
Which are really well done, actually. So I don't know. It's a split thing. It's like it's very well done in the Star Wars comics. However, there are these one-off issues where you come back to it after every so many issues of the regular, you know, hanging out with Luke, Han, and Leia. So I don't know if you could do a feature length that took place on Tatooine, but maybe you could. Maybe, I don't know. Like, do you make a gritty Obi-Wan? Because I feel like if the whole thing takes place on Tatooine, to make it interesting, you kind of got to embrace that it's this pseudo-Western / Mad Max setting and really roll with it.
Yeah, maybe it's like Logan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obi-Wan's got to get some kid to Mos Eisley.
Mm.
Or I also joked around on another podcast about Obi-Wan in his years as a bartender in Mos Eisley, and that's how he's familiar with the spaceport.
Hmm. Yeah.
That bar.
Personally,
maybe he used to play sax.
If you have a good script or multiple good scripts, throw darts at them, set it in the Clone Wars era, and I'll be happy. Because there's still just so much there that I think you could do kind of any one-off adventure for Obi-Wan and probably tell a halfway decent story. But I'm just, I don't know. Now that I'm really thinking about it, now that it's probably going to happen, I don't know what my perfect Obi-Wan movie is.
I want an Obi-Wan biopic. I'm totally convinced now.
I am going through the list of the top 30 best music biopics of all time.
Oh my God.
Just to sort of see how many of them have that opening child scene in the flashbacks.
I'm not sure I could name 10 musical biopics.
A number.
Write a number?
Quite a number of them.
Oh, quite
a many number of them.
It's Ben. Ben.
Yeah, Ben.
Come in for dinner. Call him by his real name, Janice.
Yeah. Opie.
Because his mother was Janice Kenobi. I don't know.
Janice Kenobi. Jobi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, I want to meet his parents.
Yep.
I don't want to spend, I don't need to spend a whole lot of time with him. Just, you know, show me what made him who he is. Show me a little romance with Dean. I like that.
Mm-hmm. The idea.
I want that. You know what they haven't ever done, I think, in anything is whatever that adventure was that he was on in the Clone Wars, before the Clone Wars, when he and Qui-Gon and her were caught somewhere that they always referenced in Clone Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do that story. Cool.
Oh, and,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, and bring back Qui-Gon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I would be very into that. And okay, all right. And then million-dollar question, who do you cast as Satine?
Oh, I'm bad at this game.
Laura Linney. No, I don't know. She's not the right age for that Satine.
Yeah, I can't play these casts.
Oh, Gossip Girl. What's her name?
Blake Lively?
Blake Lively as Satine.
Oh, yeah, maybe. That would work.
I'm having to Google this because I can't picture Blake Lively in my head.
Okay.
Oh, you will. All right. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
And she's old enough now. She used to be too young for that, but she's almost the perfect age now.
Right, right. And honestly, I would have said Laura Dern before she got cast.
In Last Jedi. That's another one.
Yeah. All right.
I'm trying to think. The other one I could think of could be Jennifer Lawrence, but she might be too big now.
Yeah, she could do it. You're right. Yeah. But it might not. Well, I mean, it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
And if we're
nobody's too big for Star Wars.
And if we're doing that era, true. I think we're trying to age down Ewan McGregor. So that makes sense.
We're going to have to recast young Ewan McGregor.
No,
for this.
No, you can't. No.
Ewan plays middle-aged Obi-Wan, yeah. But like this early young, like pre-Phantom Menace, you have to recast.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. It'll be okay, Garrett. It's going to be okay.
No, Ewan is my Clone Wars Obi-Wan.
But then you're just sticking him on Tatooine.
And then you're going to have CG Alec Guinness.
Oh, God. Here we go. We've just ruined the movie.
I know. That's dead. The problem, though, right?
You killed it, Tom. You absolutely killed it. No, the youngifying through CG or whatever you want to call it has gotten a lot better.
Well, that's true. They could Robert Downey Jr. him like they did for Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How come they did such a good job with Robert Downey Jr., but maybe not so totally much with Princess Leia? Less time?
Well, because you used actual Robert Downey Jr. as the model versus not Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
That's a really fair. Good point. I'm trying to think of what I just saw recently. I can't think of it off the top of my head. Irrelevant. Anyways, the kind of, I don't know, for me, and Jenny, you and I kind of exchanged this on Twitter, was for whatever reason, the thought of a Obi-Wan solo film just interests me so much more than Han Solo, which is coming sooner rather than later. And I don't even know why. I loved Han Solo growing up. Harrison Ford was like my hero between that and Indiana Jones. But for whatever reason, I'm like, I feel like I know enough about Han Solo, and Obi-Wan is still such a mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see Han Solo and Lando. And apparently that's what we're going to get.
But
we don't know the name of the movie, we don't know the plot of the movie, I feel like that's why I'm like you, Garrett, I'm less excited about the possibilities, because I'm like, well, there's the Kessel Run and how he won the Millennium Falcon. Is that what we're going to get? Otherwise, there's no things in his past that I have to see. And whereas Obi-Wan, there's all kinds of stuff in his past.
And also, Obi-Wan is the best case I've ever seen of an actor, a really brilliant actor being horribly misused in a movie or three movies, right? But everybody knows he's such a good actor that you actually want to see this really good actor take on the role of a lifetime, but with a better director and a better script. That, to me, is the driving force behind the desire for an Obi-Wan movie. Is Ewan McGregor's the perfect age to continue the role of Obi-Wan in the Kathleen Kennedy minded universe of this current pretty good track record Star Wars era, right? Whereas with Han Solo movie, you already had the best actor in all the movies that mattered to you, plus an extra one where he flippin' died.
Mm-hmm.
That character's arc is complete, and so you can only get worse from there. Whereas with Obi-Wan, it's a chance to give an actor who got worse visited upon him much better.
You're definitely tapping into something I think I didn't realize. It was also feeding my excitement for Obi-Wan. Also, you're making me think that I really want Obi-Wan to come out. I really want it to be Ewan McGregor. I want it to be a runaway smash success so that we get more features set in possibly a Clone Wars era, because I want to see Hayden Christensen take another swing at this.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can do it with a script that is well written.
Same thing. Good director, good script, you know, goodwill of the fans. It's all there.
Well put. Well, I think we've talked Obi to death, or hopefully into the life of a feature length
movie. Ghostness.
In the Force ghostness, yeah. He's going to show up, tell you to, not tell you directly to turn off your targeting computer.
He's going
to
show up and go, but the prequels were good from a certain point of view.
Yeah, Garrett's point of view.
Episode 3 was good, and portions of Attack of the Clones. Anyways.
It's okay, Garrett. You were young.
So was I, if you remember.
So Entertainment Weekly was a big thing that also took place in between now and our previous episode. Did we all dive into this? I dove into it very recently as a result of articles kind of zeroing in on arguably the most interesting bits from Entertainment Weekly, other than the
photos.
Here's
how I know magazines are dead. Because I get Entertainment Weekly delivered to my house. I love it. It had flipping Mark Hamill on the cover, and it sat in my house for 4 weeks. I have it. I own it. It's my physical property, and I haven't read it. I just keep reading stuff about it on the internet.
I don't know what to make of all of this, because we have a couple of IO9 articles and a Wired article talking about all the secrets revealed about The Last Jedi in the Entertainment Weekly articles. And honestly, none of this stuff is that surprising. The Last Jedi is going to dive into Rey's backstory because her past demands it. Okay. Han Solo's death still looms over the characters in The Last Jedi, especially Kylo Ren. Not a shock. I would hope it would. You know, I mean, Daisy Ridley gives some answers and Rian Johnson gives some answers about whether we're going to find out about Rey's past without telling us, yes, we're going to find out Rey's parents. They say, yeah, you know, it's going to define her story. She was told in the last movie that the answer's not in the past, but she's showing up on this island to talk to this hero from the past. They're dancing around the fact that, yeah, we're going to find something out, but they're not allowed to say it. So they don't say it. And I feel like that's most of the quotes I read from Entertainment Weekly, which is, we're not allowed to say anything. So we're going to say things that sound like they're meaningful, but when you really dig down into them, they don't say anything you didn't already know.
Well, I think what the takeaway from it, Tom, is what we all know. And it's that all future Star Wars movies will be clouded in mystery unless a major leak happens. This doesn't surprise me. This was the same kind of language we saw used in anything that came out of Star Wars Celebration. It was very cagey. It was very guarded. And I think we can expect that up until the point that the movie is basically out and folks have seen it.
Why say anything? That's what we keep coming back to. Why even release a trailer?
Yeah. The post Force Awakens interviews with any of the cast members or anyone who worked on the movie were infinitely more interesting than any of the pre Force Awakens interviews.
Now, there are some minor tidbits. I don't think these are crazy, mostly in the Wired version of this. Luke Skywalker is not alone on the island. There's a race called the Caretakers that are fishbird type aliens that live on the island, and they've been there for thousands of years. Again, not shocker that there's an alien on the planet that Luke's on, but that's kind of interesting. I kind of imagined him just being on an abandoned island. So,
yeah.
Or somebody's got to feed him.
Mm hmm.
Right. They kind of hearkened them to nuns. Yeah. Essentially, there is a photo of them floating around as well. It's a good alien design. Not as good as the Porgs, though, which we also found more out about. And apparently, they're also hanging out on the island with Luke. I just need a plushie of one of those in my life as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't mind this Entertainment Weekly article, but I didn't get shocked by anything I read in it.
Yeah, it's just we're kind of at that point now where we're either waiting on another trailer or if you're me, I'm just waiting for it to come out. I am ready for December to be here.
I'll be excited when the new trailer comes in the fall, whenever it comes. I'm gonna be stoked for that. I want to see a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to.
I keep seeing the Last Jedi trailer before every movie. I went to see the IMAX version of Dunkirk, and they played the Last Jedi trailer before it.
I have only seen it in the theater once, and it was before Spider-Man.
Interesting.
Which makes sense. You know, Marvel movie owned by Disney.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think the only thing I read throughout all of these tidbits that I liked, but all it really was doing was reinforcing something I kind of already figured out on my own, was them saying that when Rey meets Luke in Last Jedi, he is at the lowest point in his faith in the Force.
Yeah, we kind of get that from the trailer where he says it's time for the Jedi to end.
Yeah, he doesn't exactly seem optimistic.
He needs his Zoloft.
he needs something. He needs something. And, and I can't imagine when Rey finally gets around to telling him that his old buddy Han Solo died at the hands of
his... Is this a bad time to tell you your friend died?
Is this a bad time to tell you that your failed apprentice murdered your best friend? Like, is that...
Yeah. Sister's husband? Did you know him?
Yeah. I'm also, like, it's going to come up, right? Like, he's going to see the Millennium Falcon and be like, oh, where's Han? Why is just Chewie there? Oh.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, at least Chewie would give him a big hug.
Also, he's a powerful Jedi, and he probably felt him die.
Are we, you know, why had I not thought about this? I'm sure everyone else has thought about this. Are we going to see Luke get aboard the Millennium Falcon and sit back down in the same chair that he did on his first flight in the Millennium
Falcon? Probably. Ain't no other ship on that planet.
Right? Well, how did he get there? Where's Luke's X-Wing? Luke still has to have...
He clearly hitched a ride with the space fish people.
No, I want like old original X-Wing. I want him to go over to it like it's the classic car at the end of every Fast and the Furious movie, and they pull the blanket aside and there is an original Mark X-Wing.
Well, that's fair. My only thing is to say is if you're trying to sneak away to a secret planet, you probably wouldn't do it in a car with your own license plate. But otherwise, I totally would like that moment.
That's true. R2 is also not with him, so he probably didn't go in the X-Wing because you need an astromech to fly in one of those things.
I want him to sit down and pop that helmet with the visor down over his face and just not talk to Rey.
Yeah. How old do you need? How old can you be though, and get an X-wing and not just look like every balding dude?
No offense. He's got a cherry red X-wing now.
No offense to balding dudes who own Corvettes, but whatever the case is, I'm very ready for The Last Jedi. Will you indulge me with some Star Wars gaming chatter? For a short moment. So first up, Star Wars. So Gen Con just wrapped up. Star Wars is getting a miniatures war game.
Like a Warhammer type game.
Yes, very much like Warhammer type game. It's as all Star Wars tabletop is nowadays. It is coming to us from Fantasy Flight. They have the exclusive license to make these Star Wars games. So it's the same people that make the RPG that I play, X-Wing, Armada, so on and so forth. So this new one is called Star Wars Legion, and it's a miniatures game. They're coming out with a base set for $90. It comes with enough Rebels and Imperials for a game. They are unpainted. You're going to have to paint them yourself. But it looks to have kind of the same pick-up and play rules that both X-Wing and Armada do, where all of the measurements and whatnot are handled by pieces that come in the box. So you don't have to sit there with like your ruler and debate with your opponent if what you're doing is allowed or not. Which is something I've only played X-Wing a few times, but it was very quick to kind of pick up and play. And the idea of sitting there painting little tiny stormtroopers has me grinning like a child.
I have a friend who's way into Warhammer. I'm going to have to ask him, because he's also a Star Wars fan, if this is tempting to him, because he's invested so much time in Warhammer, right?
Yeah. What I'm really hoping is that the fallout of this means when I show up to my local comics shop, which is called The Dark Side, by the way, that instead of a bunch of little Warhammer buildings, because the miniatures are cool, but I love that they sell parts to go on your board, like your battleground board. I hope we start getting little miniature Star Wars buildings, because I'm just going going to buy them and paint them and probably not play.
Little like Tatooine huts and
yes, and Hoth huts. Like, they're all kind of hut like, aren't they?
Yeah,
actual literal huts of the Jabba variety.
Ice huts, sand huts, forest huts. Yavin hut.
Yeah, so I think this is cool. Every Star Wars game I've played from Fantasy Flight so far, I've thoroughly enjoyed, and we're still going with our RPG campaign. So that's the other thing. They're reprinting the original Star Wars pen and paper RPG.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, an older one than I even knew existed. So mildly tempted to pick that up and try that. And then the other thing is we've gotten a ton of gameplay shown from Battlefront, specifically on their starfighting gameplay, which has very little of that has been shown. And in the Battlefront that came out a couple of years ago, the space battles were very, very light or shallow. It might be a better word. There wasn't much to them. And they're going with like full on class based combat now with multiple ships for both the good guys and the bad guys, multi tiered levels. I'm so into this. I played so much X-Wing, so much TIE Fighter, so much Rogue Squadron growing up. And I've been screaming for somebody to make a game to take my money that involves Star Wars ships. And I know this is only one part of the whole Battlefront kind of package. So but it already looks deeper than anything that was in the previous Battlefront. So
the gameplay demo for PS4 is just gorgeous.
It absolutely is. And the one that came out a few years ago is still one of the prettiest games I've ever played. Can't get over that damn Endor level. You can even shoot Ewoks. If you hate them that much, you can shoot them.
Don't shoot them. I don't love the Ewoks, but they don't deserve to be shot at.
Well, that's good.
Is the Battlefront Starfighter gameplay, is that the promo that they had with the VR, the PS4 VR?
No, that was a while ago. That was for the actual, the original.
For Battlefront.
Well,
yeah.
The original, quote unquote, there's actually been three of them now, but they kind of started back over. It's a whole new studio making it and whatnot, but it was for the one that came out a few years ago. So this is the sequel to that game.
Are they going to have it in VR?
There hasn't been any VR chatter that I am aware of for the new one. I would expect a follow-up at some point, but it's not what they're selling it based on, probably because...
Wait, can I ask a question of the Daily Tech News Show host?
Mm-hmm.
Is VR in trouble?
I mean, that's everybody's been saying it's too expensive for a long time.
Right.
And now everybody's saying, the headsets aren't selling fast enough. And Oculus and Vive have knocked the prices down this summer. And so this is the time when all of the analysts will jump in and go, VR is in trouble because that will sell reports and get clicks. I don't think you can say VR is in trouble. Maybe Vive's in trouble. Maybe Oculus is in trouble, but there's all kinds of VR headsets selling out there. It's just early days. We don't know who's going to rise to the top of the pack. I don't think we've seen the headset that is going to be the one everyone says, that's what made VR work. It just hasn't arrived yet.
That's definitely the boat I'm in. I don't think it's in trouble because I don't think it's arrived. There is no mass market for the VR yet.
It's arrived and it's sitting gathering dust in my living room because I haven't had time to put on. You know what I'm going to do when we're done with this podcast? I'm going to go play something in VR. Yes,
no,
sir.
No, you're going to box it up and you're going to mail it to me because I want one in the worst way.
That is fair.
The VR headsets right now are Palm Trios and Windows mobile compact phones. They're smartphones. But they're not touchscreen iPhones yet. Yeah. Haven't got to that point.
Garrett, has BlizzCon already happened?
Oh my goodness, Jenny. No, Jenny. No, you...
When is that?
That's in November.
Delightful.
Come to my house in November.
We'll see if we can make that happen.
Book an extra day on BlizzCon. Come to my house. I'll just leave you the keys and you can play VR all day long.
Sounds like a plan. Right. I'm not sure how much Katie will enjoy that, but
that's all right. You know what? I am right by the best shopping, so she's going to be fine. There's movies. There's great bookstores.
Not far from the Universal Studios theme park. You could do some Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. Because we haven't done that in Florida where we have more of it and it's better.
Oh, stop. Oh! You just settle down over there.
It's lost its way.
Don't step to me on theme parks. But whatever. The bottom line here is I am extremely enthusiastic about the new Battlefront. I even liked the last one, which was pretty feature light. So bring on the next one. And this 10-minute gameplay trailer for the Starfighting has me feeling like a little kid again. So let's bring it home though. And let's take an email before we go. Jenny, what do you have for us this episode?
All right. So we got an email from Wayne.
Hey, Wayne.
Hey there. Let's talk about Star Wars gang. And he writes, in a tweet from Dave Filoni on July 6th, it was revealed that Ahsoka Tano and Bendu the giant mushroom, the Force mushrooms, have a conversation prior to her departure with Ezra and Kanan to Malachor and her confrontation with Vader. Articles have referenced it, like Screen Rant, many potential discussion points, but the part that interests Wayne the most is much will change, including you. That's what Bendu says. And Ahsoka says, so I will die. And then Bendu says, much like Garrison Keillor, will you? I didn't know that. And then he says, of course, I'm biased and I don't want Ahsoka to be alive just to die in the last season. I like the idea that she will reach another level within the Force. Could there be a middle ground between life and death for Force users granted by special circumstances, maybe one of which is being a gray Jedi or a Force mushroom? Again, me. Bendu seems to be already at this level, and he describes himself as the center of the Force between light and dark, which sounds pretty darn gray. What do you think of Ahsoka the Ascended? And if this concept is introduced in new canon, what could this mean for Luke, Rey, and Kylo?
My gut reaction is I really don't want Ahsoka's fate to be she transforms into a mushroom.
Fair. While you guys are pondering that, one thing I will say is if you haven't already, dear podcast listeners and consumers, go to Twitter and follow Dave Filoni, because that guy just every once in a while drops. I just found this out today. Drops the most incredible sketch art with like little text next to it of stuff that maybe wasn't in Rebels, like got concepted for Rebels or Clone Wars, but wasn't in it. And oh, Nelly, is it awesome? And I just followed it and went back on a bunch of them. And I was just like, I can't believe I hadn't been following this. Like, Twitter's too big. So, yeah. And then I also followed Pablo Hidalgo. So I'll see you guys in 6 months, because that's a lot of cool information.
I feel like I'm at the risk of repeating myself, but I don't want too many Force ghosts. I don't want it to be like, oh, anybody can be a Force ghost. Really isn't that hard, because that really undermines the idea that it was a special thing that Qui-Gon was able to pass along to Yoda, who passed it along to Obi-Wan. So I don't know how you have Ahsoka ascend without starting to cheapen that stuff, especially because she's not a Jedi. I like the idea of her being gray, but we don't know what gray means, and it risks being like, oh, well, gray means anything, you know, and anytime right. anybody's on the fence, gray Jedi them, and then boom. And that risks undermining what's going to happen with Kylo and Ren and Rey in the future movies. So when it says she's going to change, I wonder if it just means she's going to turn dark.
No.
No.
Because there's stakes to that. I mean, if
yeah, you're right.
If she turns and then Ezra has to defeat her. Ugh. What? I mean,
but
Anakin
turned. I thought the whole arc was Ezra's turning. Isn't Ezra the one in danger of turning, and Ahsoka?
And that could be the final battle when Dark Ahsoka wins over Ezra, and then Kanan convinces Ezra to fight, and Ezra has to defeat Ahsoka to stay on the light side.
Oh, God, I'm going to go to sleep.
I'm not buying any of this. I'm not buying any of it.
All right. You don't have to, because I ain't selling it. I'm just trying to spin something out of it. I give what I just said like a 16% chance of what they actually have. I think Dave Filoni and friends have something way better in store for us.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm ready for it. When does it come back? September? Do we know?
Coming up.
Yeah, I think it is September. I don't know off the top of my head, because I didn't know this conversation was coming, so I didn't look it up. But I do believe Rebels returns this fall. It returns this fall with a bunch of other television.
Late September.
Gotcha. I just want Ahsoka to live. I would already say she's pretty darn gray. I would just like to have some scenes where it's kind of spelt out, you know, what.
You look good in gray.
Yeah, I don't know. I want a scene where we have some Jedi sitting down and openly discussing how insane their belief system is. Like the dogmatic views of the Jedi are the reason. It's the reason for their downfall. Like, yeah. Anakin's entire reason for turning to the dark side is because he couldn't have a wife openly.
Kind of.
For the most part. I mean, he had to keep it in secret, which, you know, well, I guess it's technically.
He also never could really control his emotions, so.
That's true. That's true, but I don't know.
I mean, Obi-Wan had feelings, and he didn't go dark.
That is true. Also true. Granted, a lot of that stuff played off scene, and we didn't really know about it within the canon of the movies, but it is now canon because Clone Wars is canon. So, whatever the case is, Ahsoka lives. That's all that matters. That's how all of these episodes.
That T-shirt that Dave Filoni wore is canon. I'll tell you what.
Exactly. That's how this podcast is always going to digress into that at some point until Ahsoka shows back up on an episode of Rebels or Dave Filoni produces a corpse. One of the
and it turns out that Ahsoka survived long enough to become the babysitter of Snap Wexley. Hooray!
Oh, what a! I would read that comic. I would buy that comic. Star Wars Babysitter.
Yeah, if you'll buy that one, then I'm also going to ship Maz Kanata and Yoda.
Well.
Oh yeah.
Who doesn't want that?
would their shipper name be Yaz?
Yes.
Yodaz.
Yes. Yodaz. Yes.
Moda.
That's just absolutely fantastic. Who doesn't want our two old as all get out, knows everything about history characters together?
Perfect.
Yeah.
They're too much alike.
I'm all for it.
It'd probably be more boring than we're giving credit. But whatever the case is, we are at the end of another episode of Let's Talk About Star Wars. So around the table, starting with you, Jenny, where can folks find the rest of your work, including an audio Star Wars graphic?
Yep. I'm producing a podcast called Make Me Smart, which features Kai Rizdal and Molly Wood. And next week's show, which goes live next Tuesday, we are going to be interviewing Tim Leong of actually Entertainment Weekly. He's their creative director, which is why they have amazing graphics. But also he wrote this book called The Star Wars Super Graphic. And so next Tuesday, makemesmart.org. I think you'll really like it. Also, I'm JennyJ23 on Twitter, where you can often find me angry about things, but then also delighted about things.
Tom, how about yourself?
I am almost to the end of a podcast in support of Rob Reed's new book, After On. After On's a fantastic book. It's a novel about Silicon Valley and super AI and synthetic biology and terrorism and quantum computers and you will love it if you love anything about technology. And we did an 8-episode podcast. Six of the episodes are out.
Is that coming now to my house next? Should I duck?
It's coming right at you. That was my attempt at an audio graphic.
Nice.
It's episodes where Rob talks to the people that inspired the ideas in his novel. And then he and I break down how those real world ideas apply. So, you know, Fermi's paradox and the actual working quantum computers. He talks to a guy who's making them, a guy who's making augmented reality. If you want to check that out, it's after-on.com.
Fantastic. You started to say I'm almost at the end of, and I thought you were going to talk about your Twin Peaks podcast, because you're also almost at the end of Twin Peaks.
Well, yeah, Twin Peaks is by the time some people listen to this, it might be over. If you're into Twin Peaks, damnfinepodcast.com.
I've been binging the crap out of that podcast now that I'm completely caught up on that show, and I needed something to help me understand what the heck was happening in episode 8.
I know, man. It's crazy.
Oh, this barely watchable television, that 8th episode. My goodness. Anyways, folks, I'm on Twitter at Garrett Art, being confused about Twin Peaks, but not being confused about Ahsoka's fate. She is alive, damn it. And every other podcast I do can be found at amove.tv, including this one and many others like it, usually about video games. And that's going to wrap it up. We'd like to thank the Andrew Allen Trio for our intro and outro music. You can find more of their work over at andrewallentrio.com or check out their work just about anywhere music can be found, including their Star Wars tribute album on iTunes. Thank you all for listening, and until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Force! porgs, porgs, porgs.